Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hammer and Rails podcast. With you, as always, I am Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Casey Bartley.
And we are here to talk about Purdue's victory over Wright State yesterday, to look ahead to the Purdue versus North Carolina game coming up this weekend. And after the break, we are going to take a look at Purdue participating in the Wildcat Classic against Northwestern, taking place at Wrigley Field this Saturday. Going to make our predictions and put it all on the line for you once again this week. Before we get started, though, Casey, I know it's your favorite thing in the world. I've got a question for you.
I love it so much. Let's go.
Okay, I know the answer to this, but it's a setup for a further thing, and the viewers don't know the answer, so the listeners, not viewers. We're an audio format.
I have viewers right now.
So I gotta ask the question. What did you think of the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer?
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Exactly. I knew you were going to say that. And the reason is you don't watch movie trailers. Is that right?
I don't watch movie trailers beforehand.
What does that mean?
I love movie trailers. I think they are a separate category of cinema. I think they're outstanding. They're some of the more inspiring things that I watch. I like to turn a couple on that I know are good, and it always kind of gets me in the rhythm to write. But okay. I don't want to know anything about the story that I'm already invested in beforehand.
Okay, so this leads me to more questions. Mm-hmm. One, what movie trailers do you put on if you're trying to get inspired?
I mean, any of the Marvel ones are great.
Yeah.
They do a pretty good job. Honestly, for the last, 5-10 years, it's mostly Marvel.
Yeah. They do make a good trailer.
I was a big fan of WWE as a kid, and whenever they had the little montages before a big, pay-per-view match,
I loved those. Same concept. Yeah,
music,
same thing.
That's all I need.
So then my second question from that, so you would then, I assume you're going to see Spider-Man No Way Home at some point because you're a Marvel fan. It's a Marvel movie. You're eventually going to watch it, correct?
Oh, yeah.
So then would you just, when you get home or a day later or a week later, be like, I want to watch the trailer and see what was in there?
Ideally, it'll probably happen to where I'll scroll on something in the trailer and, watch just enough of it where I'm like, I guess I'll watch this. Ideally, I wait until after and I'll watch a trailer to kind of get me pumped up for the second viewing.
Okay. All right. See, we talk about this in the group chat, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I find it so fascinating, because I freaking love movie trailers. I've watched the Spider-Man No Way Home trailer probably, 6 times already, and it came out last night at 8:30 p.m. So
do you watch it and then think, oh, I think this is going to happen?
You have
a comic book lore, knowledge behind you. I really don't.
Yeah.
So is that what you're, you're watching scenes, you're like, ooh, I bet that's that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, at least with Marvel movies, that's what I do, because, grew up reading comics. My dad was a comic book reader. He was always reading DC, and he got all my brothers and I into comics. We went to our local comic shop, and we all had, a comic that we followed. And for me, it was the Fantastic Four, and so that was really what I read when I was younger. And then I got Marvel Unlimited, which is their online subscription where you can get basically every comic each week, and you're now mm-hmm. three months behind of when they actually publish in real time. And so, I mean, I think I've read the last 20 years of Spider-Man and the first 40 years of Spider-Man. So there's a 3-year period in the middle that I'm still reading to catch up on. But I've read quite a few comics these last few years.
So does it takes away from my fun if I have something I think is going to happen, because then I'm rooting for that to happen, if that makes sense in any way.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So and most of the time I'm going to be wrong anyway. So then it's just I don't want to know anything about it. I want to be as surprised as possible. I listen to a lot of geek podcasts, and they always get into stuff. And anytime they tell me something I've never heard of in the story, and then I'm like, oh, well, that would have been more cool to find out in the movie sometime.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to have some of the things mean more because you have some background, but it's a tough little line to follow.
Yeah, I don't think I have the willpower to not watch movie trailers as they come out, because, like I said, I love them. I'll watch them numerous times, and it's just, it gets me hyped for the movie themselves. And the way Marvel does a lot of their trailers, too, they put in things that aren't actually in the movie, or they'll manipulate scenes, take things out of scenes that are actually there, put things in that aren't. So you never really know what's going to be in the movie with a Marvel trailer. So it adds an element of excitement, even if what they show you is not really what's going to happen in the movie. Yeah.
Maybe
so,
I'll watch it.
I don't want to change your mind. I don't want to tempt you into doing something that you don't want to do. So I will just say I very much enjoyed it. I've watched it like 6 or 7 times. So, all right, there we go. That's out of the way. Now let's talk about the drubbing that Purdue put on the Wright State Raiders last night. Final score 96-52. Wright State could only muster 17 points in the first half. Purdue managed 51, so Purdue needed to score all of 2 points in the second half to surpass the total that Wright State would have the entire game. Obviously, that did not take long. So, Casey, I know we talked in the group chat about what we thought of the game, but one thing that stood out to me that you mentioned is Jaden Ivey had another bad game, and Purdue still won a game by 44 points. So I wondered if you could expand on what you thought of Jaden Ivey's game and what that means for Purdue that they are playing so well without him playing well.
I think he was pretty sloppy. We've seen it a few times where he's tried to get into some dribble moves, break down his defender, and he just dribbles it out of bounds. That's been a consistent problem this early in the season. In general, his shot wasn't falling. You know, he missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts. But it was also a game going into it, you know, if you paid attention to my Twitter at all before the game or in the group chat.
As everyone should pay attention to your Twitter. Exactly. There's a lot of insightful stuff on there.
A lot of insight. A lot of bullshit, too. But
well, yeah, there. But I mean, that's what Twitter's for.
So I posted a little screen grab of Wright State's last game, and they gave up like 70% shooting inside the arc to whatever team they played before. And you look at that combined with, you know, their tallest player is 6'9". Everyone else is right around the 6'7" range in the post. You just knew this was going to be a game where our big boys ate. And
Trevion Williams had
20 points. Edie had 18, combined for 38. They went 16-22 from the field. And Ivy did
16-23.
I have it inside the arc. You're counting Trey's 3-point
shot. Yes, I'm counting his 3-point shot.
So just inside the arc, they were 16-22, which is what, you know, if you watch Wright State at all, yeah, they won the Horizon League. Whoopee. It's one of the worst conferences in the country. And this team, you know, played like it did. They weren't good. I do think I like Ivy's defense this year, and I like his playmaking. Those have both been naturally just better. So I'm not worried about the scoring. The scoring's going to come. I think the tougher a game is, the more we're going to need him and the more we go to him.
Yeah.
But it's a sign of maturity that, you know, he took 3 threes. That's fine. Take open shots. He's going to be hot and cold, but I want him taking those shots. He only took 5 shots inside. Didn't finish great. Drew some fouls, though. Got to the foul line. And more importantly, he's not pressing to take 15 to 20 shots. He doesn't have to go out there and be the best player every night. He's shown that. He had a really nice pass when he drove in, rose up, and then just out of nowhere flung a Dak Prescott just out route to the corner to find Newman for a 3. Things like that are very encouraging because we have enough stars all over the floor. We want our best matchups to score. Edie and Trey need to shoot a lot this year, and he's been very mature in finding them, letting them get set up, and it's just encouraging that we haven't got great Ivy. And we are blowing teams out.
Yeah, and I mean, the level of competition obviously gets much harder in our next game, but you still love to see when your star player doesn't have a great game and you're winning games by 30, 40 points. And Purdue has scored over 90 points in all 3 of their games this season, which if you watched the game yesterday, you heard the announcer said, you know, this is the first time that that has happened in the Matt Painter era. So Purdue has not scored 90 points in 3 straight games the entire time Matt Painter's been at Purdue. And I think that speaks to just the quality of the offensive production we're getting out of basically everyone on this team and the fact that everyone can step up in any given game. The only starter actually who had 0 points was Isaiah Thompson. He was 0 for 3 from the floor, still contributed 3 assists, no turnovers. But obviously you don't love to see a starter with no points. But for me, you guys know, if you listen to the podcast, I am an Ethan Morton fan. And I thought he just played great. This past game against Wright State, his defense was great. He was deflecting balls everywhere, using his length, he's not the quickest player on the floor. He's not the most athletic player on the floor, but I think he found himself in a good position a lot of times to go out and make the opposing offense uncomfortable. Only wound up with 3 points, but he had 2 blocks, which you don't really expect out of him, a steal, 2 assists, and 3 rebounds to go with 0 turnovers. And I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to score a bunch of points for Purdue this season. It's not something that's necessary for him. It's not a role he needs to come into. But that kind of box score where he gets, you know, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, no turnovers, that's what I'm looking for him. I want him to come in, bring some energy, and see if he can make the other team uncomfortable on offense. So that's what I'm hoping to see from him. Brandon Newman also stood out to me as a guy who had a really great game, 5 of 7 from deep. And if you can have a guy come in off the bench and shoot 5 of 7 from deep, it just shows you how good the rest of the team is. And I wanted to ask you one more thing. I think it was Dave Bangert from formerly of the JNC who mentioned on Twitter that who would you take in a game, the Purdue starting five or the Purdue first five off the bench, if you include Mason Gillis as coming off the bench? And I know you and him had a little back and forth, and I wondered where you wound up on that, if you think the Purdue starting five is better or the five off the bench.
I believe it was me and Kyle Charter.
Was it? I thought it was Dave.
I believe it was.
Well, either way.
Sorry, the question again?
Do you think, you know, Purdue basically has 10 guys,
right?
Maybe 11 who you can, you know, you could really throw any of them in the starting lineup. However, right now, Purdue has a starting lineup of Caleb First, Zach Edey, Jaden Ivey, Isaiah Thompson, and Sasha Stefanovic. Do you think that starting five or a starting five of Trevion Williams, Brandon Newman, Ethan Morton, Eric Hunter Jr., and Mason Gillis when he returns, which do you think would win in a game of 5-on-5?
I mean, I definitely think it's the starters. What we've seen in all the stats with intra-squad is pretty much Edey outplays Trey one-on-one, which makes sense because a lot of what Edey does size-wise, he doesn't have to buy into Trey's fakes or anything. He can just stand there and be tall. And Jaden Ivey's on one side of the court. He's not on the other. But I think it'd be close. I think Newman would give Sasha a whole lot of trouble. I think Thompson is the one person out of those 10 that can picked on defense, and Eric Hunter brings a nice, probably our best defensive perimeter player lined up with Newman. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be a good matchup. I think the second place team would, or the backup squad would want to make it as dirty and grinded and slow as possible. And I think the starters would want to run and get out there, take advantage of Ivy a little bit. I definitely think it would be somewhere between a 4 and 7 point game.
And I mean, that's just incredible. The depth, you know, that you could even entertain the idea that a second starting five versus the actual regular starters could be a close game. And I did look up on Twitter, and you are correct. It was Kyle Charters you were having a back and forth with. Mm-hmm. So I apologize to Kyle Charters. I'm sure he's a listener. but I mean, it's just crazy the depth of this team. We had three players finish a double-double last night. Caleb First, 14 and 11. Zach Edey, 18 and 12. And Trevion Williams, 20 and 13. And we should note, Trevion Williams scored his 1,000th point as a Boilermaker last night.
On a travel?
On a what?
On a travel? It looked like a travel to me.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't think so.
Pivot, step into.
He did. It was on a dunk. I know that. But I don't think. I mean, it didn't look like a travel to me, but I'd have to go back and watch it.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, he would have got there anyway.
Absolutely.
It was by far his best game of the night. I don't think there's much to glean from Wright State, you know,
but
I think looking forward, you know, we have this game against North Carolina.
That's right.
Part of the, what is it, tip-off classic or something?
Yeah, at the Mohegan Sun.
At the Mohegan. So what I find as we go into this game against North Carolina, our offense is absolutely buzzing. And it's not just Ivy. It's not just our big guys inside. I was so incredibly impressed by the motion that our offense, I just retweeted a tweet of Fran Fraschillo, I think, who posted how well our motion offense, starting with that weave up top and then just a whole bunch of off ball shooters moving in and out. And there's something that happens when you study sharpshooters under Pater's system in the motion offense. Somewhere between that second and third year, it just clicks. They're no longer out there thinking where they have to be. They just react and know. And it creates so much just this beautiful motion and organic open space for them. And I thought this is the best our offense has looked scheme-wise. We had two guys on each side just rolling in and out of screens, letting our big guys get guys open. Newman has been on fire. 5 3-pointers. Sasha is making these coming straight up, getting a screen from Edie, left foot still in front of him as he turns around and shoots on the move, and he's hitting him smoothly. That is work that you put in on the offseason. And the body control and balance of someone like that is just incredible, and it makes this motion offense almost impossible to defend. We saw how good we were when we had two sharpshooters. Ryan Klein, Carson Edwards made that offense go. We should have made a Final Four with them. Made it to the Elite Eight. We've got three of those guys.
Who are you including in those three, just so we're all clear?
Sasha, Newman, and I guess I'm a little hesitant to say Isaiah Thompson because he doesn't.
I wondered.
Somewhere between Isaiah Thompson and I, but Thompson is a threat to shoot. He shot the ball well the first two. Doesn't move and shoot like they do, but he is a shooter. And I would argue that Ivy's ability to catch in the perimeter and attack right away does the same thing for you, but maybe even more dangerous because he's playing with two others. The one thing we haven't really had is those two shooters and someone else who's the best player with the ball in their hands. And this year, you could argue that we have two sharpshooters surrounded by our three best players with the ball in their hands, Trey, Edie, and that makes this offense impossible to defend. We're number two in KenPom right now. Offensive efficiency, and we're going into a North Carolina team who is 109th best team.
Yeah, they have not looked good. I mean, they've only played three games. They are currently ranked, I believe, number 18 in the nation, but they only beat Brown by 7, and they beat Charleston. Granted, it was at Charleston, but
gorgeous
still.
City. If I could set up a road game, I would go to.
Okay, good to know. I'll make sure to check in with you if I'm ever director of basketball operations somewhere.
Well, I mean, we had the off-season tournament there a couple years ago, the Elite Eight year.
Oh, yes.
In Charleston. That was a lovely time. I went down there, had a beautiful week, amazing crab.
Oh, well, if you're going to get crab, you got to come to Maryland. I have to say.
Yeah, but you guys don't have she crab soup.
I don't even know what that is.
Exactly.
We have Maryland crab soup, two different varieties.
I don't know. I mean, I'm ready for this challenge.
Okay. All right. Well, just so I can finish my thought, they only beat Charleston at Charleston by 11. So they beat Brown by 7 and Charleston by 11. So it's not like these are powerhouse teams. And what did you say their North Carolina's defense was ranked in the country right now through three?
109th.
Not great. Not great. Granted, there are over 300 D1 basketball programs, but you would hope if you're ranked 18th, that your defense is going to be a bit better than that.
Especially when they took on, all three of those schools are north of 200 ranking in KenPom. So those are not world beaters they played.
No. And the third team they have played is Loyola Maryland.
Yeah. So they're not forcing turnovers at all. They're one of the worst teams in the country. Teams are turning it over 11.3% of the time against them. That's just dribbling it off your foot once, 10 possessions. That's not forcing turnovers. They give up a lot of offensive rebounds, giving up almost 20%. Us as a team, 46.5% of our missed shots were rebounding.
Oh, wow.
We have two of the best five offensive rebounders in the country, if I remember correctly. And we are a team that is shooting efficiently from outside, inside. We're still over 60% shooting as a team inside the arc.
That's just outrageous.
Yeah. So if advanced metrics mean anything, this is a good matchup for Purdue. It's going to be a very good test.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope. And before I jump off North Carolina, my wife would be upset if I did not mention Loyola Maryland, where she got her master's degree.
Nice.
So she is a Boilermaker, but also, I guess, a Greyhound. So when she listens to this, she'll be glad I mentioned that, I'm sure. So this game, obviously,
no
is
chance
going.
She listens.
Hey, she listens.
What?
She does. Yeah.
What a loving, what a lovingly.
I know. You know, we've got a great relationship here. I make a podcast. I force her to listen to it. It's a real good dynamic we have.
Honey, it's only an hour 40 minutes this week.
That's right.
Strap in.
So this game is going to be basically immediately following the Northwestern game. Northwestern versus Purdue is on Saturday at noon, and this Purdue-North Carolina game is at 4. So basically, if you're a Purdue fan, you got to get everything done in the morning, and then you're going to basically tuck in at noon. You're going to have both of your meals in front of the TV, and you're going to have hopefully a great evening with Purdue getting their 7th win in football and then their first win over a ranked opponent in basketball. So it should be a pretty great few hours there for Purdue fans.
Didn't we have people in our group chat that wanted a 3:00 game? That makes no sense.
I think we did, yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be in Chicago.
Yes, they are going to be in Chicago. Travis and Kyle both heading to Chicago to Wrigley to watch this Purdue-Northwestern game.
How do you manage that? Because if you go there, The timing in theory could work that you could find a bar semi-close right after the game and maybe miss just a little bit. But then you're there for another 2 hours after a cold game out. There's no way you get back home.
No,
you make that choice, right?
No, you've got to go to a bar. You've got to have a plan to say, as soon as this game is over, I'm going to this bar, like right down the road. I mean, if you want to watch the entirety of the game, you've got to get somewhere right away.
But then how do you get home afterward?
That's your whole day. You know, you're staying at the bar for the basketball game.
You're in a hotel?
You're probably going to eat dinner at the bar. That way, if you're drinking during the football game and the basketball game, you get a little time to sober up there, get a little food in you. And then you're just going to take the drive home from Chicago. Hopefully all the game day traffic will have, you know, dissipated by then. And then you just hop on the highway and head back.
Bless their sweet wife.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure who all is going. I don't know if Travis is taking his wife and his son, or if it's just his wife, or what the deal is there. But I'm not sure if Kyle's taking his wife either. I don't know who's going with them, but it's going to be a long day for them, I'm sure. So
I don't like football games to go to.
Why?
I just don't think they're enjoyable. The weather's awful. They're long. There's a lot of downtime.
Yes, you got to go with people who you enjoy spending time with.
And it's the most naturally, like, when people stand, when they don't. None of it really makes sense. I'm a guy who got kicked out of a Purdue football game for standing the whole time.
Yes, yes. Well, when I was at the Michigan State game, as I said last week, we were in the very top row. That's where my family seats are. So we were standing the whole game, and no one's going to bother us because there's no one behind us. So that I enjoy. And it's always great for me to spend time with my family since I live in Maryland, and all of them basically live in Illinois and Indiana. So it was great to spend time with them. So there was no problem there for me. But I understand. I mean, I get it. You know, a football game can be a long ordeal, and often the weather is very bad, especially if you're watching it in Indiana.
You know, I think there's kind of a reset that happens after every biggest play, you know, scoring or whatever.
Yeah.
So it kind of, there's no frenzy that you get like with basketball where, you know, you can have a 5-minute stretch where your team is just wrecking the world and just somehow continues to get louder.
Yeah.
It's just better.
Yeah,
and I mean, I don't like to be cold.
You got to toughen up. You got to toughen up.
Do I, though?
Yes, you do.
Or do I just watch football on my...
You lived in Indiana for how long and you can't stand being out in the cold for a few hours?
Yes.
Come on.
That's how I know I can't.
You moved to the East Coast.
Exactly.
And you're getting soft. It's pathetic.
I moved to the East Coast, so I wouldn't have to do that.
I'm just saying, you know... As someone, you grew up in Lafayette, right? I mean, you got to be tougher than that.
I don't.
Well, viewers,
y'all just suffering for no reason.
Listeners, we're gonna put a poll up tomorrow on Twitter, and I'm gonna ask you, does Casey need to toughen up and deal with the cold? And we're gonna see the results.
Wait, what am I gonna lose this time?
Nothing. There's no.
You're gonna force me to eat a waffle at a Purdue football game?
Yeah, we're gonna make you go to an IHOP this time, and then we'll go from there. So
I don't know if IHOP has waffles.
I assume they do. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look at the menu, but so before we get too sidetracked here, we're gonna take a break. We're gonna come back. We're gonna talk about Purdue's game against Northwestern and make our predictions. So we will be right back with you. And we are back, and Casey was nice enough to remind me during the break to mention that in addition to the Purdue-North Carolina game on Saturday, since this is the Hall of Fame tip-off tournament, Purdue has a second game that will take place on Sunday. We don't know the time yet. It depends on the outcome. It's either going to be at 1 or 3:30, where Purdue will take on either Villanova or Tennessee. Villanova currently ranked number 5, Tennessee currently ranked number 17. So no matter what happens this weekend, Purdue's going to have two quality opponents they face. Regardless of if they win the game against North Carolina, we're still going to play another quality opponent. So it should give us a good idea of what this Purdue team is capable of after these first three games against teams that, I mean, quite frankly, we can admit we're never going to really give Purdue much of a challenge. So it should be an interesting weekend. And come Monday, we'll probably have a much better idea of what this Purdue team is going to be capable of in this season that we think could be a really special season. So
basketball.
There you go. Yay, basketball. And now we're going to move on. We're going to look at the Wildcat Classic that's going to take place for some godforsaken reason in a baseball stadium at Wrigley Field. Casey,
your
have you
continuous
ever been...
fight against stadium. Just
look, I've not. It's just playing a football game in a baseball stadium is stupid.
What did you think about when they did the hockey stuff outside?
I mean, I guess that's fine because hockey is normal. Like, at least you can fit a hockey rink in a stadium without having all sorts of weird problems like they did at Wrigley the first time they had a football game and only had one end zone.
What?
Yeah, remember, I forget what year it was. The first football game they played at Wrigley, because of the – it was like pre-renovations to Wrigley. They only had enough room to like play toward one end zone because it like ran like right up against the wall or right into the corner. I can't remember the exact details. But so every scoring drive had to go – in one direction.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You don't qualify for hosting a football game.
Right.
But that's not the problem anymore.
No, they've done renovations since then, and they're, you know, they can play a normal two end zone football game now, but
that's
I just still think it's dumb. I mean, but have you ever been to Wrigley?
You think Wrigley's dumb as like a baseball stadium too, though, right?
Yeah. Have you been to Wrigley?
Yeah.
I went pre-renovations, in fairness, so I have not been since they did the most recent changes. But when I went there, I mean, it just smelled like urine all over. It's a complete dump of a stadium at the time. I mean, I'm not a Cubs fan. I'm a Reds fan. So I had no vested interest in watching a Cubs game, but it's one of those. I went with my brother, and it's you know, this historic stadium that everybody says you need to go to, and as far as the stadium goes, I mean, I guess it was fine. But, I mean, it literally did smell like urine everywhere I went in that stadium.
It's big city living, Ledman.
I mean, at my seat, smelled like urine.
Whose fault is that?
Right. In the concourse, smelled like urine. I mean, I was not impressed. And perhaps it's better when they did the renovations. I can't say for sure. I'm sure we're going to have Cubs fans come after me. I honestly don't care. You're Cubs fans. I'm a Reds fan. It happens all the time.
You should have started that whole thing off by saying you're a Reds fan to start to soften everything you said. Because I think there are going to be some people that were legitimate mad after your sentence.
I honestly do not care. I could not imagine something that I care less about. So, you know, come after me if you must. So looking at Northwestern, Casey, is there anything you can tell me about them on offense or defense?
They're bad.
They're bad, Ledman.
They're bad.
I feel like we've had this exact conversation with other teams before, and I need more depth from you. I need a little something more. Right.
They are the Chicago stuff, the Chicago Cubs piss smell of Big Ten football.
Oh, that's not well. They are Chicago's Big Ten team if you listen to all their marketing.
So they're not good on offense or defense.
That seems bad. Those are the two major components of a football team. You know, special teams is important, but it's not one of the two major components.
So. You know, they're scoring 16 points a game. Not great. They are converting on 35% of their third downs. They are scoring a touchdown on 65% of their possessions in the red zone. They are not a particularly efficient running team. They complete about 50.4% of their passes. And, the one thing they do is they have a semi decent offensive line. They always have pretty good offensive linemen and, they've protected their quarterback, but unfortunately their quarterback's bad, so they're just going to need more time to be bad.
And make mistakes.
Yeah. And their defense, this is the shocking part because Northwestern had terrific defense last year. It's definitely better. They've been pretty good against the pass, which is a little alarming. They have a top 40 pass. It's probably closer to top 30, only giving up 200 yards a game, which is pretty good. But they are getting absolutely slaughtered on the ground, 5.8 yards a carry. So you could argue that they're bad in the right places for Purdue because we're not going to run on it. I highly doubt it.
I'm sure we'll run to a degree, but obviously it's not going to be the focus of the offense. Brohm seems intent on putting enough run plays in there to make the defense be honest and respect the run to a degree, but it's certainly not going to be where Purdue's going to score their points.
If by degree you mean a number that is calculable, then yes, that is correct. He will run a certain amount of times. I just don't know if we're ever going to be that efficient. If we are, this seems like it would be a decent Horvath game. I feel like anytime he's had success, it's with teams that have struggled against the run, that he can get a little bit of a lane, get some forward progress, and let it use his big body to push forward. But I've been very impressed by our pass game the last, you know, 3 weeks. So I would assume if we're going to be effective against Ohio State, we probably can still get through Northwestern. Their secondary is talented, but they don't really get after the quarterback very much. They're 98th best in sack percent. AOC should have some time. David Bell has chewed up. He is on a string of big games right now. So I would say everything is pointing in the favor of Purdue, but this could definitely be a game where you have to worry about is AOC's turnovers.
Yeah,
those are always kind of looming
in the background because it has been such a problem for him in the past. But like you said, three games in a row without one, and we kind of are hoping that he's turned a corner. Obviously, no quarterback's going to be perfect, so he may throw one here or there, but you can certainly excuse that if he plays like he has in previous games, you know, completing 40 of 50 or so passes and 3 to 4 touchdowns a game. If he throws a pick here or there, you can live with that. So when we're looking at what Purdue has an opportunity to do in this game, they currently sit, you know, with 6 wins. This would be the first time since 2007, if they win, that Purdue has won 7 games in a regular season, which is a horribly depressing stat, but It also shows the improvement that this team has suddenly, you know, had this year. And Purdue actually hasn't won 8 games in a regular season since the prior year, 2006. So, I mean, it really could change what people think of when they think of Purdue football if we continue to win these games. And Purdue will be favored in these next 2 games against Northwestern and against Indiana. Northwestern, I don't believe we said this, currently sits at 3-7 on the season, just 1-6 in conference, which is so strange. I mean, I know in college football you have so much turnover from season to season. Players graduate, players leave, transfer portal so huge now, but you know, last season Northwestern was 7-2 and played in the Big Ten championship game. Of course they got defeated by Ohio State there, as most people do in the Big Ten championship game, but to go from 7-2 to sit at 3-7 and already out of bowl eligibility contention is just such a change from last year. It really was unexpected for me from Northwestern, because under Fitzgerald, they've been just so consistent.
Yeah, they've really struggled to find a quarterback, and you can only go so far and hold things together for so long if you don't have an offense that can make plays and someone under center that can, you know, attack defenses. Generally, you know, his lines on both sides of the ball are good. His defense plays fast and smart, so it's definitely a little shocking. But right now, it's trending in our favor for sure. I will say, that beating by Ohio State, our defense coming into that, you know, top 20 pretty much in most stats, we ain't top 20 no more.
Well, no, playing Ohio State will do that to you. So, you know,
let's hope.
Yeah, let's hope they, you know, play with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder after that last game. All right, Casey, so now I think it's time to talk about what we actually expect to happen, what we're going to pick, who's going to win the game. But before we do that, we'll take a look back at what we chose last week. So heading into last week, I was sitting at 4-5. I picked against our beloved Boilermakers. I said 35-21. Obviously, I was, you know, a little off on what Ohio State was going to score, but I was correct in the outcome. So I now sit at 5-5 on the season. You may recall, went full homer and basically said, let's go. Ohio State's going to win, or Ohio State's going to go down. You picked Purdue.
Never happened.
30. It did. I have it in writing, and you can listen to it in audio format. You picked Purdue 32, Ohio State 29. You were 6-3 heading into that game. You now sit at 6-4. So I am just one game behind you, just nipping at your heels. But I think we might be on the same page this week. So I'm not sure if I have a real chance to catch up to you, but I will let you go first, as we do every week. What do you think is going to happen? Who is going to win in the coveted Wildcat Classic? I hope they have some sort of Wildcat trophy they give out. I don't think they do, but it'd be great if they just had a little Willy the Wildcat and the winner gets it. That'd be great.
I would just want like a paw.
Just a paw, okay.
Wildcat paw. Yeah, I think Purdue's going to win. If I'm going to pick them against Ohio State, I'm probably going to pick them against trash team.
Yeah, I would think so.
I really like our offense. I think we're staying aggressive. We're running at the right times, and we are using our weapons finally in ways that are unique, aggressive, that are putting defenses in bad spots. That touchdown to Anthrop early against Ohio State was a beautiful play design, forcing the safety to guard pretty much 3 defenders in the end zone. And we're doing stuff like that pretty much every week. AOC is on fire, not making mistakes. So let's go. It's going to be windy. They're going to probably run the ball quite a bit just to take advantage of Northwestern's weakness on that side of the ball. I'm going to go 37, Northwestern 18.
All right. Well, it should be windy. It is the Windy City, so I don't think that would be too surprising if it is windy in Chicago. For me, I think I mostly agree with everything you said. I think the emergence of Jackson Anthrop on this team has really changed what the offense can do. They've just been throwing him all around the field, using him on trick plays, using him in the backfield as a running back.
Can
putting
he come
him
back
out.
Next year too?
No, he cannot. This, I believe, is his last year. I believe he's going to be shortly. He'll be 45 years old.
Okay.
So it's the last season for him, and he is also the last Anthrop. So there are
for
no
now.
More Anthrops walking through that door. Yeah, we got to wait for the next generation. But for now, we've had them all, and there's no more coming through the door anytime soon. So I think, as you said, the offense has just been so much better, so much more creative, and AOC is really clicking. David Bell has continued to be phenomenal with his string of games of over 100 yards, you know, with a couple in the 200 range. So I think Purdue has really found something, and I hope that the crowd at Northwestern, at Wrigley, is going to be pretty pro-Purdue. There's a large contingent of Purdue fans in the Chicagoland area, and given that Northwestern it has been very bad this year, I'm hoping that maybe the crowd can be a little more pro-Purdue than it would be at a home game for Northwestern. So hopefully that can carry Purdue over the finish line, help them to their seventh win in the regular season, as I said, for the first time since 2007.
Who'd have thunk it?
I know.
Not me.
It's like that Paul Rudd clip you always see from his appearance on Hot Ones. Who would have thought? Not me. I'm going to pick Purdue 45, Northwestern 21. So I think Purdue will win handily. I think it's going to be fun, and I think it'll springboard Purdue into the final week of the season, coming home to hopefully reclaim the old oaken bucket. So
you know you're going to lose to me by one, right?
I know. I mean, maybe we can pick again for the bowl game, and we'll see if we go different routes there. But it seems unlikely that there's a way for me to catch up.
You can always pick Indiana next week.
I could, or I could pick Northwestern this week. But I just, you know, I'm trying to get to bowl eligibility here. It's not all about beating you. So I just want to make sure I can get to the Motor City Bowl should things go wrong for me. So I got to get that sixth win.
Next season we'll have rewards for when you hit certain win totals.
All right.
So we're just playing the scoreboard too.
Okay. All right. That'd be good. All right. Well, I think that is all we've got. We're looking forward to a pretty great Purdue sports weekend. We got one football game, two basketball games. Both basketball games going to be against ranked opponents. So, you know, this is when basketball season really starts to feel real. We get to see real opponents, get to see hopefully some really good games, and Purdue taking out two quality opponents, which would really set them up for some great seeding come NCAA tournament time. Because really, for this Purdue team, it's not a question of if they're going to make the NCAA tournament. It's what seed they can get and
how far.
That was the turn of phrase you were looking. Well, you know, I got lost in the middle there. there's just, you know, my basement where I record is a mess. There are toys everywhere, and I'm just looking at the mess and thinking I should clean this up. But I'm not going to.
No.
I'm not going to, because I have a toddler, and there's really no point. He'll just make a mess of it tomorrow. So, all right, well, got a little off track there at the end, but that's all right. for Casey and myself, thank you all for listening. Make sure to subscribe, like, rate, review, hit us up on Facebook, hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you think. And let's go, Boilers. I want to hear Casey give us a yell on our way out, Dave Shondell style. Boiler up.
How about them Boilers?
Love it. Absolutely perfect. There we go.
All right.
Make sure to take out that random pause in the middle. Yeah. I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
All right. Very good.
See you, man. Thank you.